Well, I wanted to say a little bit more tonight about the trip. Really appreciate so much your prayers. That's such an encouragement to me when I'm there. I think about that. I had asked the young people who came over on the Sunday night before to pray about some specific things. All of those turned out really well, and I thought about that a lot. And, you know, it's a great opportunity just to be able to fly and get there fairly quickly and be with brethren that I care about a lot. I was able to arrive a week ago last Wednesday in João Pessoa and rented a car and was able to have some really good conversations Wednesday afternoon. Had a study Wednesday night, kind of a survey of the book of Esther. It lasted probably an hour and 15 minutes. That went well. That was encouraging. Some good comments and things like that. We were able to just try to take some general lessons out of that book. And then we left pretty early Thursday morning, 11 of us, to go to Fortaleza, which took us a long time, probably about 11 hours. But we stopped for an hour for lunch. But we traveled in two vehicles. I rented a van, and Sandro drove it, and then I drove his car. And so Sandro and his family, Sandro's probably the most mature brother I know in Brazil. He's about 40, really solid guy. He's got two sons and his wife. And then Juninho, his little brother, who's 21, went. And Giovanni, who's about 28, I think, and I've known since he was young. And then there's three single teenage ladies in the congregation that went. Stephanie, who's an orphan who's been adopted, and then Ana Carla, who lives with her mother, who's had some cerebral hemorrhages. She's not right mentally or physically completely, and so her mother went too so that she could go and so she could take care of her. And then Jennifer has just obeyed the gospel. She's a friend of both Ana Carla and Jennifer are friends of Stephanie. So we had a good group going. That was cool. And in Fortaleza, it was great. We got there Thursday evening and stayed till after church Sunday night. And we had, Friday was a holiday, so we had studies all day in the book of Judges, and then Saturday in the latter part of the day as well. Saturday morning, the young people met together. There's two churches that we work with in Fortaleza that are relatively close to each other. And so people from both churches come to the studies, probably had maybe as many as 70 in the studies. We had 45, I counted, in the young people's study. I have no idea how they got that many kids there. We're talking about kids, broadly defined. But that went really well. We were able to do a study. We sang some. Then we broke up into smaller groups to talk and pray. That went really well. We were there from like 9:30 to noon. So that was encouraging. Encouraging just to see several young people, quite a few young people that weren't Christians that were there, but they were paying attention and seemed to be eager for what we were doing. We've got a lot of opportunities in Fortaleza. Both of the churches are relatively small, but big for Brazilian standards. I'd say both churches are 40s, maybe, something like that, 40 to 50, somewhere in that range. And so it was really good being there. They do a wonderful job for us. It's so helpful. Besides the group from João Pessoa that came, I arranged for Jessenie to fly out from Jequié and for João Felipe. Well, that's just a hard situation in Manaus to fly over. João Felipe's almost 16. Jessenie is 21 probably. And so all of us, the 11 of us, and João Felipe and Jessenie all stayed in the same house with Dizinho and Leda, and they've rented the upstairs to Gerlison and Tayani, a relatively newlywed couple. And so they just opened up their house. And they've got a decent-sized house, and for Brazilian standards, it wouldn't be any bigger than many of ours. But they had inflatable mattresses and things in different places, and so we were all able to stay together. The Christians there had over the last year worked on just gradually donating some money to feed everybody. So they fed us from Thursday night to Sunday night. And that meant feeding quite a few of them too that were there helping to cook or just hanging out or whatever. They fed at the Zinho's house, the kids that had come to the kid gathering on Saturday morning. So, I mean, wow. they did a lot. And just, we're talking about big quantities of food, because we're talking probably a lot of times we had maybe 30 or 35 people or 40 people eating there. So it's amazing that they did all that. And at the end, I went to Designio and I said, there's a lot of expenses you had by doing this in your home that weren't covered by just people buying food and all that. And I tried to give him a little money. He wouldn't take it. He said, no, we're good. We've got it covered. And so I really appreciate their hospitality. Good conversations while I was there also. On Sunday, we go to the Presidente Vargas Church on Sunday morning. I taught, Sandro preached. And then we spent part of the afternoon with them, part of the afternoon back at Designio's house, and then Sunday evening, we were with the Cidade Nova group, and I did the study, and Sandro preached. And then Juninho had to be back by 8 o'clock Monday morning for a test. He's in college, he's a civil engineering student. So we left about 8 o'clock, and I drove till 4 o'clock in the morning, and that went really well. I wondered how I'd do with that. I drank a little bit of coffee along. They gave me a thermos, and that helps a lot. That was really good. Well, in fact, that was about the easiest driving I did. You know, what you want in Brazil is to be there with no traffic. The roads, most of them are not horrible. There's a few that are. But they're two-lane, hilly, curvy roads with slow trucks. And so either it's going to take you the rest of your life to get there, you're going to have to pass. And I mean, you're talking about then convoys of trucks, practically. And they stack up. And so it's just, it's like, you feel like you're just, you know, kind of running a race or something. It's just tense all the time. But it was great on Sunday night. Man, I didn't have to pass many things. And whenever I did, there was no cars coming, and it was great. So we were able to get back quicker than we normally would have. And so that was great. And so I spent then Monday in João Pessoa. That was good. I had a really good talk with Henrique, who's 19, good friend of mine. He was really helpful to me. Had a really stressful conversation on Monday night that I'd planned to have that was just difficult. Several of us had talked in Fortaleza, the João Pessoa people, about the conversation. They all agreed I needed to be the one to take the lead in it. So I did. And that went really well. It went really, really, really well. I tell a little bit more about that in my notes. But so that was encouraging. That was a relief. And then Tuesday I traveled all day by plane to Vitória da Conquista. And it was a runaround, but I finally got the car rented that I had reserved and got to Claudinho's house. I've got the GPS down in Brazil now. That is a big help. Wow, it's a big help. And, you know, technology and I are still only passingly acquainted, but that all worked, and that was nice. And so we were able to have a study Tuesday night with the group there. That went well, I thought. And then Wednesday morning, my plan was to meet with Kaiki. Kaiki's got this disease or something that's affected his vocal cords, and he's still not working, but he's doing much better. He's going back to work next month. He's actually pretty hearable now. Before, when I'd seen him 6 months ago, he could just barely whisper, really. So he's doing much better. So I thought I was just going to study with Kaiki, but it turned out Claudinho and Rebecca were able to get off what they were doing and join us. And Pedro from Jequié was there, and so he joined us. We had a great study Wednesday morning. They had a lot of really good practical questions. I would call them doctrinal questions, but they were very important questions in their context. We talked about a lot of stuff, and then we studied some in Philippians as well. I thought that was probably almost the most enjoyable and encouraging thing we did. There's good guys. These are all people in their 20s, basically. And all our people... all the people who basically grew up in the church in Jequié. And, but their families, none of their families are very strong. So these kids have really outgrown their families. And, you know, just really, they have a good heart. And so just studying like that and talking with them was just very encouraging. Then Pedro needed a ride back to Jequié, so I was able to take him from Vitória da Conquista to Jequié. It was nice to have the company and the guidance, and was able to spend some time with some people in Jequié on Wednesday afternoon and evening and taught the study Wednesday evening for that group. They're struggling a lot, but I did have good conversations. And then drove back early Thursday morning to Conquista, where I dropped the car off and got the airplane, and spent all day flying to São Luís of Maranhão, where I'd never been. I've never been in the state of Maranhão. It's a big state in Brazil, up in the north, basically. And So I was able to find online a hotel really close to where the airport was. So I was able to get there and spend the night. It was perfectly adequate. It wasn't the kind of hotel that you'd probably want to spend on your vacation or whatever. It's clean and very fine. It had an air conditioner even in the room, so that was nice. And so then I left real early on Friday morning and was able to drive to Bacabao, where Wellerson is. That drive's bad. For a while, it was great. Four-lane even for about 50 kilometers, and then two-lane, and then bad two-lane, and then really bad two-lane. But we got there, and the last 40 kilometers were good again, so that was nice. And Bacabao is a city of about 75 or 100,000. And so little struggle to find where Wellerson wanted to meet me, but we finally worked all that out. And so we were able to spend about an hour and a half together on Friday morning, and then probably 3 hours together on Friday afternoon. And so it went really well. I mean, he's got a good heart. I know you wanted me to baptize you. We've talked some, but just tell me what you know about baptism. Well, that was great. I mean, wow, really. I mean, he was giving book, chapter, and verse, and, you know, just really had a good understanding, a solid, deep understanding. We talked about some specific areas, and we talked about the challenge of his grandparents that really are very skeptical of all of this and didn't know he was going to be baptized and don't know he's still having contact with me. So I really encouraged him to tell them. I said, it's going to be so important because ultimately you can't hide it and be honest, probably. And you're going to need a lot of contact with brethren by Skype and WhatsApp and whatever, and even being able to go to studies in other places. I'll arrange for you to get there. But you're going to have to, you need that. You're totally isolated. So as the closest Christians I know are the ones in Fortaleza, 12 hours by car, according to Google Maps. So, you know, he's in the middle of nowhere as a Christian. It was really cool on Friday afternoon. You know, one of the challenges, where do you baptize somebody? You know, I don't happen to have a baptistry in my back pocket or something. So he remembered he had been to, several years ago, a club. I don't know if that's the best word for this. It was an outdoor, rural kind of a place where you could pay 7 reais a piece, that's like $2, and be there for the afternoon and use their outdoor swimming pool and whatever other stuff they have there. And I don't know if it's a place where you could maybe even spend the night for a fee or something like that. But he didn't really know where it was. You know, so, and he didn't know if it was open. You know, he figured it was more the weekends. So we drove ways, and he said, I don't think it's this far. So we drove back ways. He said, I think it's here. Go up this road. So we went up, and we were able to ask directions two or three times on this dirt road, and finally got there, and looked like it was closed down, but he found the gate and went in, and it was not. And so we were able to go there. So it's kind of, I don't think I'd ever baptize somebody in these circumstances. You know, there were probably maybe 15 kids playing in this little bitty pool, and then maybe six or so in the bigger pool. Because I can't swim, so I'm like, you know, I want the shallow end of this thing. But the shallow end was like right up to here. And he's shorter than I am, so baptizing him was really easy. Just, whoa, there you are. And I know it was unnerving for him a little bit. He's really shy, and so he said everybody was looking at us. I wasn't really paying attention, but you can imagine that had to have created kind of a scene. You know, we were not in bathing suits and things like that, and, you know, I look kind of odd in Brazil, especially in the north, for all sorts of reasons beyond what I look odd here, so... But that was great, and we were able to talk for a long time afterwards. That was really good. I could tell right at first he was still kind of absorbing everything. But as the afternoon went on, it was very encouraging. I heard from him yesterday. I heard from him today. There are a lot of bad things about technology, but boy, this communication like that is so helpful because we can just, you know, communicate, send messages. He usually messages me in writing, and I message him back by audio. And so that's just really helpful to be able to have that. I've already communicated with Gerlison in Fortaleza, and he's already been communicating with him. So I'm hoping eventually Gerlison can go there and spend a weekend, try to encourage him. So pray for Wellerson. But it was a great, great trip. Came back just fine, no problems yesterday. Had a pretty tight connection, but it wasn't a problem at all. And so it's great. I mean, you know, the Lord has just blessed us with these kind of open doors and opportunities, protected, and, you know, things just went really well. So thank you for your prayers, and let's thank God for these opportunities. So, it's move on to talking about deacons a little bit. We talked about a lot of the details of just what does the Bible teach about deacons this morning. I want to talk about what I would consider some special areas of concern that I have about deacons tonight. And just two or three things. But one thing is, to be a deacon requires a servant mindset. We've really got to have a servant attitude to be a deacon. You know, there are people who want to have their feet washed, and there are people who want to wash them. The deacon's the guy who wants to wash them. He's the guy who wants to humble himself and do things that help, even if they're not pleasant or they're not fun or you don't get recognition for them. You know, there are people who want to be called deacons, and then there are people who want to serve others. This is for people who want to serve. You know, people who are quick to act, to help people, to help the group. And a lot of the things that deacons would do are things that don't get a lot of glory. Not gonna get a lot of recognition. You know, more behind the scene things and just working and helping in different ways. You think about Acts 6, to put this in a current context, how enjoyable would it be to divide up groceries for a bunch of widows that are already complaining that they're being mistreated? I mean, that's not going to be a glorious, fun, you know, wow, I got my name in the lights, everybody's going to like me now. It's not like that. I mean, it's just serving. And serving requires a servant mindset. I ran across this article from a friend of mine, David Tomley, who wrote this over 30 years ago, Do You Want to Be a Deacon? When a man pulled into a service station to fill his car with gas, he noticed the local veterinarian was working the pumps. After some small talk about the weather and the local economy, the man's curiosity finally got the best of him. He asked the veterinarian if the animal clinic was closed. The veterinarian, as he checked the oil, assured the man the clinic was closed and the building was for sale. As modestly as he could, the man asked if the problem was financial. Not at all, the veterinarian replied. I just figured out, after all that education and training, that I don't like animals. Folks, the Church of the Lord Jesus is in the people business. Jesus came to earth and died on Calvary for the sake of people who are lost in sin. The gospel of Christ is a message for people, a message carried by people to people. The church is comprised of people who are at various levels of spiritual maturity, people who share a common salvation in Christ. The work of the church, whether evangelism, edification, or benevolence, is directed toward people. Do you want to be a deacon? If so, you're affirming your desire to serve people, work with people, and attract people for the Lord. Working with the Hebrew and Grecian widows in the daily ministration is a people activity. Attending the needs of the fatherless and widows is a people activity. Visiting the sick in the hospitals or the shut-ins at nursing facilities is people-oriented. Directing teaching programs in the congregation involves working with numerous teachers. Putting together a church directory involves contacting and communicating with people. So you want to be a deacon? Fine. Do you like people? Are you comfortable working with other people? Can you get along with your brethren, or does your track record indicate a problem in this area? Aside from the scriptural qualifications, which you're probably quite familiar, there are some very practical considerations which are too often overlooked. These considerations, though not specified in 1 Timothy 3, are nonetheless found to be basic truths of the entire scope of Christianity. If deacons do the work of deacons, people skills will be essential for them as for the work of elders or preachers. Well, that was thoughtful and helpful and just helps us think about, we're working with people, we're serving people, we're humbling ourselves to help people. I have some concerns about people who may not be chosen to be deacons. Look with me at James 3. James 3 is a really helpful passage to me. I've come to appreciate it more and more and refer back to it more often. James 3:13. Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above, but is earthly, natural, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exists, there's disorder in every evil thing. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy. And the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. Now, what you think about this idea of not having jealousy and selfish ambition in our heart. Because here's the thing. It may very well be that you would be eager and willing and like to serve as a deacon, and you may not get chosen. I mean, you think about the church in Jerusalem in Acts 6. They chose 7. Ever wonder what the 8th guy thought? I mean, there was some 8th guy. There were, you know, they chose the best 7. If they chose the best 7, maybe they didn't even, but they chose who they thought would be good men following the criteria. But there had to be some other guys who were also spirit-filled, wise, of good reputation, who didn't happen to be the ones who, for whatever reason, were among those chosen. What did they think? And you know, I mean, I said this a while back when we were talking about selecting elders. You know, there was a church I was in years ago that had 2 elders. It was a small church. And those 2 elders were obviously the 2 men to be elders. There was nobody else in the ballpark. Almost all the others were just very young in the faith. In this group, it's not like that. You know, we're all very not that dissimilar. There's not a big gap between elders here and everybody else here. We're all kind of in one basic category or class. I think that's going to be true with deacons. You know, it's not like there's 2 or 3 that you'd say, now those are the men, and nobody else is kind of in that ballpark. It's not, I don't think we're in that situation. So if we select 3, what will the 4th guy think? If we select 7th, what will the 8th guy think? You know, so we can begin to feel resentment and bitterness toward, I don't know why he was chosen and I wasn't. And you know, that's even harder, always is, if it's somebody in your category. If everybody chosen is, you know, 60 or above, and you're 35, maybe that wouldn't be so hard. But what if there's a couple guys chosen that are just right like you are? You know, and like, I don't get it, what's different about them than me. And it can really hurt us, and it can really create some resentment and bitterness. You know, think about it. I suspect this isn't the first time today that some people here have been thinking, well, you know, probably at some point we need to appoint deacons. And I suspect, I don't think there's anything bad about this. There may be some people who are thinking, you know, I'd kind of like to do that. I hope there's some people who would kind of like to do that, who want to serve. And if they could be helpful in that, they would be eager to do that. So what will you do if you're one of those people? I kind of think I might be one of the ones, and I'd be cool with that. And you're not asked. We've really got to have the right, humble, unselfish, unambitious mindset where we're going to pray for and hold up the hands of those who are chosen. We're going to encourage them and work together with them and not let ambition and jealousy and resentment ever touch us. But we got to pray about that now and be determined. I think any person in this group who would think anything about being a deacon needs to think, okay, and if it's not me, that'll be cool. And if it's not me and it is my best friend, that's cool too. It doesn't matter. We're all serving the Lord. It's not a popularity contest. It doesn't mean they're better than I am. And, you know, I don't know if those were the best 7 in Acts 6. They were the ones the congregation ended up choosing. On the other hand, think about the discouragement that we could feel if we're not chosen. You know, sometimes you can, really, you know, almost in anything, if you're not picked, it's like, what's wrong with me? You know, what did I do? Why wasn't it me? You know, isn't that a natural feeling to just start beating ourselves up and thinking, I must not be doing something right. You know, I must not be coming across right. You know, I must not be able to accomplish anything. We feel unappreciated. We can feel like, you know, I guess I'm just not very good at serving. Now, remember the thing we talked about this morning when it comes to the word deacon. Deacon means serve. And so who are deacons in this church? The truth better be every single one of us in the general sense. We're all servants of the Lord. We're all to be servants of each other. And so if there are some special people for some special assignments, it doesn't mean that suddenly the rest of us aren't deacons. In one way, we're all servants, and we must continue to serve. You know, it would be possible for somebody who right now is doing a lot of stuff serving, if they weren't chosen as a deacon, to think, well, you know, I guess I'll just kind of fade into the background. I guess my service isn't really important. This has to be one of those things where all of us continue to serve. We all of us continue to shoulder a burden and do our part. We will never be, as a church, what we ought to be unless every joint and every muscle and every ligament and every part of the body, every member, is active and working and doing what they can. God's intention wasn't that there be the worker class and the spectator class in the service of God. We don't have that. That's pretty popular in denominations. You've got the clergy and the laity. And if you've got a title, you work. And if you don't, you just pay the others to work, or you just applaud them, or you watch them. It's not ever supposed to be like that among us. We are all brothers. There's not big brothers and little brothers. There's not important brothers and unessential brothers and sisters. We're all supposed to be one family in Christ. We're all serving God. We're all deaconing God. And so, you know, we must not think that if we get some special church servants that, well, I don't need to serve. All of us still need to serve. Let's do everything that we can. The fact is, in many ways, there are several people here who are deaconing, whether we've ever called them that or not, because they are doing jobs that are very important in the group, often jobs that maybe hardly anybody knows they're doing. It doesn't matter. The Lord knows. And if it's helpful, God's glorified, His kingdom is expanded, His people are served. That's what really matters. We're all one team striving together for the faith of the gospel. And so my concern and my goal in this lesson is that appointing deacons doesn't somehow divide us, but it unifies us. We don't suddenly begin to think, oh, wow, well, there's those guys and there's me. That we think we're all in this together. We're all servants. We're all God's people. We're all disciples. We all love God. We all love each other. And if some deacons are chosen for some specific things, hopefully all of us will continue to serve and help them and work with them. And just we continue to be one family, growing more and more. In the end, the service we're giving glorifies God. In the end, the service we give is for the Lord. It's a blessing, an honor to God. It's a way of spreading His word more. It's a way of helping our brethren more. That's what we want. There is a lot of room for improvement, always, right? We haven't made it yet. We're not everything we ought to be as a church. So we've got a long ways to go, and that's going to require the efforts on the part of every one of us to keep working and growing. So I felt like those were some other considerations that we ought to give in this. And I appreciate your listening, appreciate your attention, encouragement, and certainly appreciate all that you've done for me and the Brazil work and so forth. Just so encouraging. I'm able to talk to the brethren there in several cases, tell them how many people are praying for them. They always say, please give everybody a hug, tell them we love them and are praying for them and so forth. I hear that all the way around from all the Brazilian brethren. I couldn't possibly give all the hugs they asked me to. But count yourself appreciated, and they do appreciate a lot. Several of them say thank the groups that send me and things like that, because it's such an encouragement to them, especially when they're isolated, to be able to have contact with other brethren. So tonight, you've got another opportunity to obey the gospel. We're going to stand and sing. We're going to sing. We're resolved. Let's be resolved and serve the Lord.